this election gives us that opportunity to have a very long overdue discussion about the Supreme Court and its role in our lives and how we would like to see the court go into the future.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thank you for joining us today. Our guest is Casey Maddox, Senior Counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, and he's going to be talking with us about why the United States Senate should wait until after the 2016 presidential election to hold hearings to find a replacement for Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, who passed away in February. At ADF, Casey plays a pivotal role on the Life Team, where he has been active in defending the sanctity of human life and holding the abortion industry accountable for its fraudulent use of taxpayer dollars. Casey is also active in defending the conscience rights of healthcare workers. Casey, welcome to Family Policy Matters.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you on, and we are always so appreciative of our allies at Alliance Defending Freedom and all the great work that you do. Now, Casey, as you know, following Justice Scalia's untimely and tragic death in February, President Obama wasted no time in putting forth his choice for a nominee to fill that now vacant seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. Before we talk about that, if you would, explain for us how the Supreme Court nominations work and who ultimately decides who will serve on our nation's highest court.
Well, you know, under Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, the president has the power to nominate someone to sit on the Supreme Court, and the Senate has the ultimate responsibility to provide consent for that nominee to serve on the Supreme Court. They provide what's termed advice and consent. And so it's really a shared responsibility between the president and the Senate. And so that's where, particularly with respect to the Senate, that's where the American people get to provide their input. Of course, we've had a Senate election recently and elected the Senate that we have, and it's their responsibility to decide if that nominee or any nominee will sit on the court.
Well, ADF and other legal experts have argued that the U.S. Senate should not hold hearings on Justice Scalia's replacement until after the presidential election in November. Why is waiting until after the election so important?
You know, I think one thing that everybody can agree on is that this is a very unique election season that we're going through. And the American people are demanding to be heard right now. And I think it's very important that we not have what would likely be a very contentious nomination process, hearing process for any Supreme Court nominee right now in the middle of an election season like this. I think the better course of action is for us to wait until this process plays itself out. We have the next president. This is a terribly consequential decision. Justice Scalia was the pivotal vote on a number of 5-4 issues, from key religious liberty cases, partial birth abortion, the Second Amendment rights, many others that he was the key vote on. And so, you know, the American people now have an opportunity to weigh in on the scope of the Supreme Court and what they want to see the future of that court be.
As some of our listeners may not recognize, appointments to the United States Supreme Court are essentially for life or until one of the members chooses to resign for whatever reason. And so it's not just a limited, finite amount of time that they serve, but they can serve for many, many years. And so it is a critically, critically important process for those nominations to be made and scrutinized by the United States Senate before those placements are made.
That's exactly right. This is, you know, the Supreme Court is nine individuals that have an increasing amount of power over our lives. Not only key questions, like I said, of religious liberty and things like that really impact people on a day-to-day basis that the Supreme Court gets to decide, but there's been a change in the court over the last several decades where they've taken more and more of that power on. And at the same time, as you said, this is a court that is an appointment of the United States Supreme Court is for life. You're there for as long as you want to remain on the court. And so, it's very important that we, the American people, have a voice in who that person is going to be. And I think this election gives us that opportunity to have a very long overdue discussion about the Supreme Court and its role in our lives and how we would like to see the court go into the future.
Well, Casey, one of the points ADF has made about the Senate confirmation hearings is that the Senate really has no duty to act on the president's nominations. Explain that for us.
Certainly. Well, the president actually has no responsibility constitutionally to even nominate anyone, and the Senate certainly has no responsibility to do anything with the nomination once it's made. The Senate has the responsibility, of, according to the Constitution, to provide advice and, if it chooses to, consent on a Supreme Court nominee. But how it does that, whether it does that, is completely up to the Senate to make that call. So the Senate has, in many previous years, you've had the Supreme Court with only eight justices or even fewer for large portions of time. They're able to continue to do their business. They're able to still decide cases, hear cases, and decide them. So there's no, it's not as if this is a shutdown, right? The United States Supreme Court continues to serve, continues to do its work. Current justices of the court have said on sort of both sides of what people usually think of as the ideological divide on the court have said that they're perfectly able to continue to do their work. So there's really no rush. And instead, this, you know, waiting until the next president gives us the opportunity for the American people to speak into this process.
Well, we've heard some discussions that suggest that this is kind of an unprecedented move, that the Senate would wait or stall or not immediately take action on the president's nomination. What is the history of the United States Senate with respect to acting on presidential nominations for seat on the Supreme Court during an election year?
You know, it's really the opposite. There's very little, if any, precedent for the Senate actually filling a vacancy that's created during an election year. Probably for very good reason, because of the same sorts of concerns that are animating many of the folks today. So you have to go back, for example, to 1932, I believe, was the last time that anyone was confirmed in an election year. And so you have to go all the way back to then. That's before we actually had FM radio. And before the last time you actually had any nominee that was confirmed during an election year by a party from the opposite, where the president and the Senate were opposite parties. The last time that happened, Yale was the dominant power in college football. It was 1888.
Right? Wow.
So, you know, it has been quite a long time. That was the world we were in the last time that an opposition party Senate was actually asked to consent to a new Supreme Court nominee to fill a seat that was vacated during a presidential election year. The normal process is to simply wait these things out, allow it to carry over. And in the early years of the Republic, you had several examples of that, where you had a vacancy created just in the first few decades after the Constitution. You had a vacancy created, and the Senate said, "Let's wait until we have the new Senate convenes. The new president will be able to make a choice, and then we can go from there."
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Well, you touched on this already, but what about those who argue that the Supreme Court cannot function properly or well with only eight justices? That if there are eight justices, that it could result in split decisions and just leave some of these major cases that are pending before the court in limbo, so to speak. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, you know, I think the first point is for people to understand is that the Supreme Court hears a relatively small number of cases. Now, they often are consequential cases, but the Supreme Court hears very few of them overall. I think they get asked to hear about 8,000 or 9,000 cases a year. They hear about 85 to 90 cases a year. So, you know, first of all, that's the Supreme Court's caseload. Even since Justice Scalia passed away, the Supreme Court has been issuing decisions. It's been making orders and issuing decisions, and it's perfectly capable of doing that going forward. And in those rare instances where the court splits 4-4, then all that means is whatever the lower court decided continues to stand. And so, you know, that's by no means the worst, you know, a terrible scenario for a lower court that has already heard the case, has already made a determination, that decision just continues to stand. And the other thing that the court can continue to do, if they want to hold a case over because they think that maybe the new ninth justice will make the difference, they're perfectly capable of doing that. That's one of the benefits of being a Supreme Court with lifetime appointment power, is that you could really do whatever you want to do. If you want to wait and hear the case later, you can. As a matter of fact, in Roe versus Wade, that's how Roe was decided. Roe was held over from one sitting to the next sitting. They actually argued Roe versus Wade twice. So there's no reason why the Supreme Court can't continue to do the same thing. If they have a case that they think needs to be heard by a ninth justice, they can simply wait for a ninth justice, and it's not the end of the world.
Well, Casey, to kind of put this into perspective, what would you consider to be some of the most important cases that are currently pending before the Supreme Court that they could either make decisions on with eight members or possibly wait and address or decide when that ninth member is appointed?
Well, you know, just a few of them off the top of my head. You have the case dealing with Texas's abortion regulations. That case is currently pending before the court and is one that the court could either go ahead and decide, either 5-3 or 4-4, or could hold that case again until the fall. And as I mentioned, would be a nice parallel with Roe versus Wade, which was held over in exactly the same way if they decide to wait on that case. And, of course, you have just tomorrow, you have the Zubrick case, the cases of the Christian colleges and universities, as well as Little Sisters of the Poor that will be heard at the Supreme Court dealing with the Obamacare abortion pill mandate. And so that's yet another case that, you know, that may divide the court. And if it does, we'll see if the court decides the case 5-3 or 4-4, or if it decides it wants to wait on the outcome of the case.
Well, Casey, at this point, how has the Senate responded to the president's nomination of a replacement for Justice Scalia? And do you think there's any chance that the Senate may hold hearings before a new president is elected?
The Senate has been very clear from the outset that they will not hold hearings or any vote on this nominee. And I expect that will actually hold. I know that it will probably surprise some people to put that much stock and faith in the United States Senate, but I think they really do. From the meetings I've been in, from hearing people talk about this on Capitol Hill, the Senate seems to have really understood what's at stake with this choice, and I think they are ready to stand resolute on this and make sure that they hold out and wait for the next president to make their decision. I think that's ultimately in the interest of all Americans, right? If you want to have the Supreme Court not be a political body, but to actually be an effective check on the power of the presidency and the power of Congress, if you want it to actually be that way, then what the last thing you want is a hyper-politicized hearing in which you have presidential candidates grandstanding on Supreme Court nominations for television. And that's ultimately what would happen. It would become a sideshow. That's not how this should be. This is a lifetime decision that should not be made in the middle of electoral politics. It ought to be made when cooler heads can prevail and we can sit back and see what is the direction that the American people would like to see this court move.
Well, then I think that just emphasizes the importance of this election, not only the election for president, but the election for our members of the U.S. Senate and other races down the ballot, but particularly those two top ballot races because of the gravity of this position and possibly a couple of other positions that may come available on the Supreme Court. Well, Casey, we are unfortunately just about out of time for this week. I do want to give you an opportunity before we end our conversation to let our listeners know where they can go to learn more about your work and Alliance Defending Freedom.
Well, sure. And let me say, first of all, thank you for all the work that you all do. You know, it is a blessing to us to be able to work with some great family policy councils, and yours is certainly right there, among the best. And so we are very appreciative for all the great work that you all do in North Carolina, and we're just happy to be able to partner with you on it whenever we can.
Thank you.
But you can go to the ADF website is adflegal.org, adflegal.org, and you can find out about the kinds of work we're involved in, both at the Supreme Court and in the states and around the country.
Well, ADF does great work, and the feeling is very mutual, Casey, that we are so appreciative of ADF and all the work that you do. So thank you so much, Casey Maddox, for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us about this very important issue and for all of your great work at Alliance Defending Freedom.
Thank you.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online, and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.